Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Rabbi Michael Katz on to Be'av and talk about the idea of love in Judaism and soulmates in Judaism. What does to Be'av mean, and could it perhaps mean more than just finding a soulmate?
Okay, wonderful. Great questions. There are also some very, very well-concealed statements there by some of your listeners, where they talk about shackles and love and so on. Not sure if those quite fit together. But,
yeah, soft, good shackles.
Kind of mixed metaphors. But anyway, the idea, first of all, Tu B'Av, it's the name Tu. Tu is Tet and Vav, which is 9 plus 6, which is the 15th of Av. So first of all, it's interesting to note that 9 plus 6 came about because we don't want to use a Yud and a Hey, which is Hashem's name. Yeah. And so it became known as Tu B'Av, but really it's the 15th of Av.
All right.
And it's a date on which, throughout Jewish history, there were the, let's call it the falling away of, or the banishment of, various different blockades and things that came in our way from accomplishing, from achieving our real closeness to God and our real closeness to each other. So for instance, when we were punished in the desert with the fact that the 600,000 men had to die out in the desert, they all died, we're told, on Tisha B'Av from year to year. In the last year, nobody died, and they were amazed, and they took a look at the moon, and they said, well, this may be a 9th day moon, but it might also be an 8th day moon, and maybe we've got the date wrong, and they expected that some people would die the next day. Nobody died on the next day or the day thereafter. When it came to Tu B'Av, to the 15th of Av, there was great rejoicing because everybody realized at that moment that everybody would go into Israel. This was Tu B'Av, Chamisha Asar B'Av, was a sign that the decree was over. So it's the sign of the end of decrees, the banishment, the breaking down of these decrees. Later on in Jewish history, and this is where the link comes to marriages, later on in Jewish history, there was a time when people started arguing about land ownership. And because the tribes were allocated various land portions in Israel, there was the worry that a woman who'd inherited from her father, she'd inherited land, that she now marries somebody from another tribe, and therefore land disputes were developing or would develop between the tribes. And so the sages of that era said, if you can't sort out, literally what they said was, if you can't sort out land issues between tribes, please don't marry each other. So rather marry within your tribes. Now this was terribly limiting. If you think about the difficulty today, we talk about a shidduch crisis and finding your bashert, as your caller there said. When we talk about those things, it's hard enough when you've got the whole array of Jews to pick from. What about when it's limited to 1/12 of that, when you can only marry within your tribe? This was terribly limiting, and because of those limitations, people realized that, hey, one second, you know, we kind of gone about this all wrong. We placed land before we placed love, and we placed all of that before we placed marriage, and so on. And at the end of this decree, which lasted for a generation, which I think was 30 years, the sages chose to lift it, and they chose this date. They lifted it on Chamisha Asar B'Av, which is actually tonight and tomorrow. They chose to lift it at that time. And it became then a tradition. And for a number of other reasons, which we're not going to go into today, but it became then the idea that it was a date for the rekindling of bonds, of marriages, of people meeting each other. All of a sudden, the girls could go out and they could choose a groom from another tribe, and the guys could go out and they could choose a girl from another tribe. And all of a sudden, there was a much bigger pool, there was a much bigger selection, and the opportunity for people to marry each other.
Gosh, that is absolutely fascinating, Rabbi. I Googled this and there was none of this on Google. So, wow, thank you for adding to our knowledge. That is really incredible. And this idea of a soulmate in Judaism, does it have any force, any power, any meaning?
Yes.
Or is this a modern day thing?
No, so we truly believe, maybe even in a bigger way than the concept of a soulmate, we really believe that the souls come into this world and they're actually connected to each other. And it's a matter of reconnecting them for the chuppah, for the marriage to take place. So one soul is born I can speak from personal experience because I'm married to a foreigner. So one side is born on one side of the world and another one on the other side of the world. And there is a whole array of different workings and machinations that bring people together, and all of a sudden they meet. And this is all what we would call divine providence. But what is it? It's the two parts of the soul who are on this path absolutely to find each other. And therefore, they are part, it's not only a soul mate, but we really believe that we're part of the same soul. So why do some people not meet their basharat? Why do they not meet their soul mate? Well, maybe they're not opening their eyes enough. Maybe they're not looking enough. You know, we sometimes think that we've got to travel to the ends of the earth to find it. And it could be,
maybe it's right in front of us.
The proverbial, yeah. The girl next door. Yeah.
It could indeed. Wow. That was so interesting. Rabbi Michael Katz, if Kathy Keller was here, she'd say, that's a keeper. We'll have you back. That was awesome. Thank you so much for your input this afternoon. That, I learned a lot, and, I'm sure we all did. Thank you.
Take care. Thank you.